Welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're about 35 minutes late. We start the program just after the top of the hour. My guest, Pacific Legal Foundation attorney out of the Bellevue office in Washington, state of Washington, Brian T. Hodges. So we were talking about Seattle City Council rental laws, two main ones. Must accept the first qualified tenant that applies and barred from checking criminal history. The first one they won, then they lost at the U.S. At the Washington Supreme Court. Then they couldn't go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and you're still working on the one. It's in the federal. It's in the state level and the checking criminal history. Your battle with that.
It's at the federal trial court. Yes.
Oh, it is at the federal. Okay, good. And so, I mean, not good. You know, don't want to be judgmental, but good for you. The next topic a little bit is accessory dwelling units in California. And we had talked about a state Supreme Court decision from 1917, Buchanan versus Warley. And then I thought the second Supreme Court decision that we were going to discuss with ADUs from 1926 was specifically for ADUs. But you started to say when we ended the last segment that it's also relates to the rental laws. Tell me about the 1926 case.
Yeah, in the case is called Village of Euclid v. Ambler Realty. And it's the first case where the Supreme Court was presented with this idea of zoning, you know, the broad community-wide land use presumptions, really, is what zoning is. Zoning set, basically draws lines around the community and says, this area is good for homes, this area is good for industry, this area is good for farming. But it's not that simple, because what it does is zoning takes a snapshot of sort of the political preferences of the moment. And so in the case Village of Euclid, you had a developer who wanted to build multifamily dwellings, like apartment buildings, next to an established neighborhood. And the Village of Euclid had adopted a rule that barred that use. It said you can only use this property for, you know, what we want you to use it for. And the realtor brought the case up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court, somewhat surprisingly, upheld the zoning rule. Before Euclid, the court had been much stricter about enforcement of property rights and had taken a very close look at restrictions that outright barred the use of property, because that was really antithetical to our nation's understanding of property, especially the right to build a home, is just built into the land. Your right to make use of it is built into your ownership of the property. But in upholding the idea of zoning, the court did one other thing that has really shaped our modern culture and the difficulties that people have in making profitable use of their property. The court said that when we look at one of these restrictions or prohibitions, all we're going to ask is whether it's rationally related to a legitimate government objective. It is such a vague concept, because you and I could argue that sentence for hours and not come up with a concrete test. So over the years, as courts have become more supportive of government rather than critical of government, it's turned into a test like the one that we saw in Washington, that the Washington Supreme Court adopted in order to uphold the first-in-time rule, that asks only, did the government provide any sort of conceivable justification rather than an actual nexus between, you know, in that case, choosing the first applicant and advancing social justice, which is what Seattle had argued. When you ask only whether there's conceivable relationship, really it's a license to do anything, because anybody can invent a conceivable relationship between two data points.
So, first of all, Village of Euclid, is this Ohio?
Yes, it is. It's right outside of Cleveland. It was a suburb.
Used to know someone from South Euclid, Ohio. And Ambler Realty, God, I wonder if they're still around, 1926. So in the article that you wrote, you said the U.S. Supreme Court upheld a zoning law that barred multifamily residences.
Yes.
So
in that, yeah.
But so it almost sounds like the way you were talking, you almost would have thought that they actually went the other way.
Yeah, you know, and that's when I was talking about how zoning is a snapshot of the political preferences of the morning. There, the prohibition on multifamily dwelling was justified as when you bring in the families that live in apartments, and this is the court's words, not mine. I'm taking a step back from these words. That they are a parasite on the community, and their words again, and that they're only coming in to take advantage of all the good that the established families created with their manorial lawns, et cetera, et cetera. Nowadays, we have an opposite view. Nowadays, we believe that denser development is preferable in, especially in compact urban settings, and that single family homes are the problem. So you see, with this constantly switching, we need to have some way of testing whether this law is legitimate beyond just whatever the government says goes, because they change their mind all the time.
It's very interesting. And of course, as you say that, I imagine many listeners are saying, wait a second, I don't think density is good. I like my single family home. I don't want to pay paradise and put up an apartment building. It's certainly, but like you say, I think the evolution certainly has shifted. But what about the urban boundary line? It seems to be sacrosanct that there's no way we're going to be going out. Now, of course, in Santa Barbara, you start going out in the foothills, you get into issues of fire, but there's other areas. There's, you know, up the coast. Do you think that's just never going to change, the urban boundary lines?
The urban boundary line is one of those zoning ideas that it is artificially rigid when it can be much more flexible. In Washington, we have a process by which we adjust the urban boundary periodically. I believe it's every 7 years. The city and counties are supposed to look at development patterns to adjust the boundary, and they're allowed to build flex into it. And then other ideas like Portland, their urban growth boundary was so tight that they realized that there was no developable land within their urban growth boundary. So they had to look at it again. And when they did that, they saw there's a lot of large lot, single family zoned properties within the urban area. And that land is prime land for denser development. So they opened up properties that had certain size and setback and utility requirements, had a right to build ADUs. And that opened up just with a pen stroke. They opened up 116,000 potentially developable lots.
And this is in Portland, Oregon?
Yes.
Well, we're pretty much running out of time. So this, you know, that would have been a great segue to then discuss the accessory dwelling units in California. And you had another really interesting case, Cordelia Donnelly. Her case, Donnelly versus San Marino. But we're out of time. God, it was great talking. Brian T. Hodges, senior attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation out of the state of Washington. And I'll just end with this, Brian. I was talking to my cousin who lives, I think, in North Woodmere, Long Island, New York. And we use the term single-family residences all the time, right? Condos, planned unit developments, single-family residences. But in North Woodmere, when they say you live in a single-family residence, that means a family must move in. So some college kids can't move in and have rentals. So I just was shocked that that's going on in 2020. I don't know how they can get away with that.
That's another topic that we should talk about in another show.
Oh, you're familiar with that?
Occupancy restriction laws, yes, they are very contentious, and they are a barrier to affordable housing often.
Amazing. Okay. Well, we got a topic for next time. Let's not wait so long to have you back on. Brian T. Hodges, Senior Attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. See you next time. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. I'm going to fit this in. I wrote it in 30 seconds. And then Richard can just go to commercial when I finish. I hate crows, and I'm not going to lie. They pick on the songbirds and make them cry. I don't want to kill them, but wish they go away. If they all move to Canada, it'd make my day.